what you do.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
Yes, we are. And I am he, Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, of Paul Revere, Talk Radio. And tonight in the first hour, we have with me none other than Eustace Mullins, back by popular demand. And of course, he's sort of a fixture here now on many programs on RBN. And for good reason. He obviously is very informative, very entertaining, and very, very well received. And, of course, we invite you, if you have a question for Eustace, who's well known to our listeners, you can hop on the line at 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins, the World Order, our secret rulers. Hello there.
Oh, hello there. Good to be on your show.
Thank you. Good to have you back. You're always very, as I say, very interesting and
loaded with information.
Well, I know you've been brushing up for tonight, and you've been doing a little research, and I have a few questions and topics that I would like to bring up.
Well, that's
and I'm sure our audience does as well. But what have you been looking into recently, the last day or so, Eustace, in preparation for this great opportunity?
Well, I've been getting ready to examine the situation. Actually, nothing's changed. You know, we've got a static situation, so it doesn't give me a whole lot of openings.
In other words, the more things change, the more they remain the same, huh?
Well, you know, George Bush is becoming the Jimmy Carter president. You know, Jimmy Carter was the most ineffectual president we've ever had.
Well, I wouldn't say that now.
We had widespread inflation, and we had a business downturn and so forth.
We also had the betrayal of a lot of countries in the world and overthrows of governments and murders and so forth. But
well, that was most of the CIA. I don't blame Jimmy Carter for that.
No, he was just the front man, right? He wouldn't know. But anyway, so you say that things really haven't changed much, and I agree with you. And it's sometimes just the names change to protect the guilty, as
well,
they say.
Well, always protect the guilty. You know, in the Soviet Union, Stalin murdered 1 million people a year for 7 years. 70 years, that's 70 million people. No one has ever been arrested or charged for a single one of those crimes.
Well, one of the reasons is they had a lot of help, and Joe had a lot of help from the United States government and the United States media as well.
Well, that was the whole Bolshevik Revolution, which the Russians had nothing to do with. It was carried out by the British Secret Service with the aid of Wall Street bankers. So that's it. That's
Anthony Sutton certainly researched that subject well, and Professor Sutton documented a lot of what you were saying, although these Bolsheviks, indeed, many of them were transplants, and many came from New York.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And brought a bundle of gold with them, too, didn't they?
Well, when Leon Trotsky got on the boat to perpetrate the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, John D. Rockefeller stuffed $10,000 cash into his pocket. And John D. Rockefeller, we used to give out dimes. You didn't hear him giving people $10,000 very often.
And you know what $10,000 in today's dollars would be?
Oh, in 1917, my gosh, that would be $1 million.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to stuff $1 million in your pocket these days. Huh?
Trotsky didn't have any trouble with it at all.
All right, Eustace Mullins already raring to go. We'll be back to begin the program. Hop aboard. Uncensored Radio Free America is on the air. I'm Rick Adams.
Back now, and
Our number toll free is 1-800-313-9443 on this Tuesday evening with our guest, Eustace Mullins, the great, if you will, political observer, the writer, the author, the speaker, and, of course, a one-time government employee who was literally fired for some strange reasons. Isn't that the truth, huh, Eustace?
Oh, it wasn't strange at all. They fired me because I was a correspondent for a newspaper in London, which is called the Social Creditor, which Ezra Pound was one of the backers of that paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me to be their American correspondent, which I did. And some people like Senator Herbert Lehman of New York, of the billionaire Lehman Brothers banking firm, they didn't like me writing for this paper.
Why not?
Well, apparently Lehman never heard of freedom of speech. So these people, these billionaires, think they can dictate what everybody thinks, and they usually do, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh. And so you were fired from the Library of Congress.
Yes. And I went right into federal court and filed a lawsuit against it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was dismissed without a hearing with prejudice so that I could never bring it again. And I, to this day, I'm the only person who has ever been fired from the staff of the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., for political reasons. My work was actually quite satisfactory there. I got three promotions. So nothing was ever done about it to this day. And at the same time, there were people in Washington foaming at the mouth to get Alger Hiss's pension from the State Department because he had been a KGB agent.
Yeah, yeah.
He saw nothing wrong with having two jobs at once, but that was a little too much.
I'll say. So you survived them, though. You survived many of your nemeses, many of your foes, and all through the decades, and you are still corresponding, writing, appearing on talk shows like this. So that has to be something. I mean, something said for Eustace Mullins' agility, to say the least.
Well, something he said to our mentor, Ezra Pound, who was the only person who ever was sentenced without trial to spend the rest of his life in an insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And he never did have a trial. The government finally dropped all charges against him, and he walked out a free man after 13 and a half years imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I got off lucky compared to Ezra Pound.
I guess you did, and you were one of his disciples, obviously.
I'm his last living protege, believe it or not.
Protege, yeah. Excellent. Okay, now let's go to the phones. We have people already interested in talking to you, so let's see what they have to say, what they have to ask, and the number is 800-313-9443. Clinton, Wisconsin, you're on the program.
Oh, Rick?
Yes.
Hello, Eustace.
Hi, Ben.
Hello.
I have a question, two questions.
All right.
I purchased some bullion, okay, in the event of using it as an exchange medium. And I'm wondering about other exchanges. I can make comments about toilet paper and coffee grounds and all that, but I'm really interested in your comments about that. And I also wanted to know, let's just assume that we might get back to a proper money system at one point in time. Some of the arguments I've had with people, discussions, were how do we, you know, not use some kind of fiat currency in a world like today? And that's the basic question, Eustace.
Well, American Express Company prints traveler's checks. That's currency, you know. It's perfectly legitimate.
Okay, some kind of
charge
note,
for it, too.
Some kind of note?
So you got to have some kind of medium of exchange.
Right.
And they have to use something, whether it's gold or paper or the yaks and the Pacific Islands, they use millstones, big millstones that weigh about 500 pounds.
Okay, so in the event that the normal societal medium of exchange goes away and there's an, let's call it an underground medium for the lack of a better term right now, what do you suppose, how would the value of these bullions really be maintained and established when the media would not be talking about any particular exchange rate, perhaps?
Oh, well, you know, our Constitution pegged the the gold and silver content of the dollar.
That's right. Good point. So there's a value assessed in the Constitution itself. And a weight.
Yes.
So we would generally rely on that.
Uh-huh. Well, but that can be easily done, and if it's correct, the people will accept it.
Okay, and then one last question, iterating back to the first point. What did you observe during the period, during the Depression era, that people used to barter with, like toilet paper, coffee? What was in demand back then by people?
Well, they actually made wooden nickels, all kinds of...
really?
Oh, yes.
That's interesting. Where the plug nickel come from?
Yes. In fact, there was a saying that sprang up during the Depression that said, don't take any wooden nickels.
Yeah.
And people were taking wooden nickels all over the country because they had to keep commerce going somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived through all that, and it didn't really affect anything one way or the other. When they got the medium exchange back under control again, they went right back to the same old Federal Reserve notes, interest-bearing currency issued by privately owned banks.
Well, all right. Thanks for your call, Clinton.
Thank you, Rick. Good night.
Yes, good night to you. What happened when Roosevelt and his administration confiscated all of the gold, or at least had the American public, those that were willing, to bring their gold to the government? What happened to all of that gold? Was it put in Fort Knox?
Well, supposedly it was put in Fort Knox, and supposedly it was later taken out. Edward Durrell, who was a very wealthy sponsor of mine for some years,
mm-hmm.
spent a million dollars trying to find out whether there was gold in Fort Knox or not. And they finally wound up with six congressmen being taken to Fort Knox and taken down into the depths of the earth on these elevators.
Yeah.
And they were shown a cage in which there were stacks of bars. And so they told these congressmen, these bars are all gold. The congressmen were not allowed to go in and look at them.
I know. That was in the 1980s, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was 1980s. They did it several times, I believe.
Right. I remember when this Dr. Peter Beter got on his...
Peter Beter was really going on that. I remember
was
that, too.
A little crazy, but anyway, he came up with that theory, and Phil Crane and others, you know, said, well, all right, let's find out what's going on. And they looked at one compartment there of the Fort Knox, and that was it. They said the gold is here, it's there, nothing's been touched, the guys are crackpots, so let's drop it now. And essentially that's what they did. That was their audit of Fort Knox.
Yeah, that's the audit.
Just like the audit of the Federal Reserve System.
Yeah, that's never been audited.
Now, you know, I'd like to just shift gears a little bit here with you, because I've been doing a little bit of reading about World War II, and, you know, one of the things that I'd like to bring up at this point, and our audience is free to comment or bring up more on any topic. But what happened was with Yugoslavia was a very interesting situation. Reminds me of what's going on now in Iraq. When the people of Yugoslavia revolted against an alliance with Germany, Hitler invaded the country, as you know.
Oh, yes.
But then what happened was there was a government in exile in Britain. And that was a government with, as its head, General Mikhailovich. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He was a Serb. He was a Serbian patriot.
Oh, yes.
Mikhailovich stood by and took to the hills to organize a resistance movement. Now, after Hitler attacked Russia and the German power began to wane in Yugoslavia, the communists sent Tito in, a Croatian. And he went back to Yugoslavia, ostensibly to join Mihailovic and help him fight the Germans. Well, of course, Mr. Mihailovic wasn't willing to do a coalition government with the communists, just as he didn't want to sit down and have the Nazis take over. He didn't want the communists either. Well, of course, a campaign was begun in the media, in this country and in Britain, as you know, to call Mihailovic a traitor, a Nazi sympathizer, and so on and so forth, till finally they ushered Tito into power. Now, this was the same thing they had done with Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong in China just a few years down the road in 1949, as you recall. You follow me?
Oh, yes. So, well, the CIA has done a lot of that work all around the world ever since 1948.
Mm-hmm.
Helping communists get into power and attacking so-called right-wing organizations.
But, you know, this is something that most Americans just have no knowledge of, no understanding of, how we had a chance to save and rebuild Yugoslavia after World War II, and instead,
oh, he certainly did.
Instead they betrayed it into the hands of Tito, and of course Tito was praised as a so-called independent communist who was neither Soviet nor, of course, later Red Chinese as well. And now, of course, we're going back in time to revisit that episode, and we find that is absolutely nonsensical. It was pop and poppycock then, and it's poppycock now, basically.
Well, the CIA programs are always poppycock because they're made up out of whole cloth. One of the assets of the CIA is Saddam Hussein of Iraq, who was a CIA asset for some 40 years. And now we're trying him for war crimes.
Well, you see,
when he committed those war crimes, he was an asset of the CIA.
He was a nationalist. He was an anti-communist, to his people, he was a patriot. However, the CIA went in knowing that if they could court him and use him, someday they could undermine him. And this is what they've done in every single country
since they were created. Exactly right.
Absolutely right, you know. And now, you heard the latest with Pat Robertson there calling for the murder of Chavez in Venezuela.
Well, he didn't talk like that when I went to college with him at Washington Lee back in the 1940s.
With Robertson, huh? All right, stay where you are. Eustace Mullins. We'll be back with more and your phone calls. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned.
First step in winning the war, spreading the word. Tell your friends Rick Adams is on RBNLive.com.
And we are back with Eustace Mullins. 800-313-9443 is the number. And Eustace, I was talking a little bit about Marshal Tito and Mihailovic, and how Tito was ushered into power at the close of World War II. And, of course, ever since then, what went on in the so-called Iron Curtain countries, justifying greater expenditures of money in the so-called Cold War, which certainly enriched these bankers that owned the Federal Reserve System. Boy, it made them billionaires, huh?
They love Tito. They backed him all the way.
Oh, yeah. And they also love money. As we know, the love of money is the root of all evil. And, these guys certainly have proven that, haven't they?
They certainly have. They've been very consistent.
Well, one man that didn't go along with it, as you know, and who wound up paying for it with his life was was General George Patton. And General Patton, his diaries were published, I guess.
They're terrific books. I've written articles from those books.
In 1974, the Patton Papers published, and he revealed a lot of what he felt. Of course, these very seldom get any airplay today for obvious reasons. But in 1945, in September, when he was ordered to evict German families from their homes and turn the buildings over to Jews, Patton commented in his diary, quote, "Evidently the virus started by Morgenthau, who was Secretary of the Treasury, and Baruch are of a Semitic revenge against all Germans, and it's still working." The same month he wrote to his wife, "I am frankly opposed to this war criminal stuff. It is not cricket and is Semitic. I am also opposed to sending POWs to work as slaves in foreign lands where many will be starved to death." In other letters to his wife, he wrote, quote, "If what we are doing to the Germans is liberty, then give me death." Boy, he got it, didn't he, huh?
Well, the strange thing was that German was almost adopted as the official language of the United States when this country was founded, mm-hmm. and 52% of the present population of the United States, or
right.
1940,
right.
Was German in origin.
Absolutely.
We had more German settlers, and we had French or English settlers in the United States.
Excellent points. Excellent points. But you see, the controlled media started attacking Patton at the time. You probably remember because you were alive.
Oh, yeah.
As being a pro-Nazi sympathizer.
Well, he'd become the enemy all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the interesting was the only American general that the German general staff admired was General Patton.
Mm-hmm.
They thought he was the only general we had, which is probably true.
Well, you know, he knew what the war was all about.
Well, he was a professional soldier.
Yeah, exactly. But he wanted to, quote, finish the job. And as you know, he wanted to continue to march on through Moscow.
Oh, he was absolutely devoted to that.
And, of course, because of that, because Eisenhower was taking orders from interesting sources, let's say he was working hand in glove with the Reds, Patton never forgave him. And Patton wanted to expose Eisenhower and blow the whistle on the whole military. Of course, he had an unfortunate accident, as we learned from history.
Well, there were six attempts on Patton's life, as we learned from his diaries. A mm-hmm. Polish plane tried to shoot him down on routine reconnaissance, and he chronicled six absolute attempts against his life,
mm-hmm.
which he all survived.
mm-hmm. No, until the final one.
Yes, until the final one.
Until the automobile accident. It'll work every time, won't it, huh?
Well, that was probably the air bubble introduced into his arm, which caused a fatal stroke.
But when the Morgenthaus and the powerful pack of Zionists in the government under Roosevelt squawked so much about Patton, Truman was, of course, inheriting the job. Eisenhower obliged the Jews and demanded and finally got the firing of Patton. And that was an important step forward in his own career, Eisenhower's presidential career to come.
Oh, that was that. Well, he could not run for president. Patton was on his way back to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and Eisenhower could never have been elected president if General Patton was walking around in
the country. He would have not only not been elected president, but he probably would have wound up in the Huskow.
Very likely.
Well, I mean, you know, you talk about war crimes and the crimes that were committed. You know, men like James Bach wrote the book Other Losses.
Oh, that is a terrific story.
Terrible indictment.
And that's a million young German soldiers were deliberately starved to death.
Over a million, actually. It was a million and a half that were documented in camps that were starved. Now, Morgenthau himself, Henry Morgenthau, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, had come up with this plan to further emasculate Germany, and even Truman himself, as bad as he was and turned out to be, could not have enough stomach to go through with the ultimate plan. So he was let go, but Truman, of course, also paid the price in his career later on. You know, he started making a few ruminations that just didn't jive with the power brokers at the top. So he, too, obviously was eliminated. He had bad advice from within, the firing of MacArthur and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
Were things that worked against Truman. But remember, the people behind the scenes are the ones we don't see. Those
well,
are the people
they're the ones that make the decisions.
Sure, sure.
Well, you know, we went to war against Saddam Hussein in Iraq because he was threatening to inundate this country with anthrax biological weapons and smallpox.
Yeah, that's why Dick Cheney was was already taking precautions, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back with more calls and our guest, Eustace Mullins. I'm Rick Adams.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, we're really getting into some history tonight. This is the History Channel right here, rvnlive.com with Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, and my guest, historian, writer, author, Eustace Mullins. And, you know, before we go back to the phones, Eustace, this whole story about this worm, Henry Morgenthau, Jr., and how he managed to get into this administration in Washington during the war, and what he was planning to do, was just an incredible story that is probably never going to be told in any public secular forum. It takes programs like ours to get into the truth, get into history, and to learn about the treason, the literal treason of the Bolshevik fellow travelers in Washington who were in high places from the 1930s onward, you know. And when Joe McCarthy came along and started to start scratching at the surface here, and that's all he did was nibble away at the surface, boy, they went after him with a vengeance and a hatred and a terror. Because,
well, that's today. Today they still, whenever they mention McCarthy's name, they foam at the mouth.
That's because they know that it represents a threat to Bolshevikism.
Well,
and the Bolsheviks do not, see, they create a pariah, and then they knock him down, a straw man, then they knock him down, and they create buzzwords and all sorts of canards that then anyone else in the future comes along and begins to do a little historical research about any of these atrocities from the Bolshevik Revolution to World War II is automatically labeled, just as they did with Patton and now they're doing with Cindy Sheehan and others who stand in the way of this this internationalist, globalist, Zionist agenda. All right, 800-313-9443 is the number. And Scott in Massachusetts, hello there.
Hi, Rick.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, Eustace.
Hi there.
It's my pleasure to listen to you, sir. I'm wondering if, you guys are saying that these Morgenthals in high places go back to the 1930s. I think it goes back another 40 years from there.
Well, probably, Scott, but, you know, Roosevelt brought them all in under the big tent, you know?
Right.
I mean,
I was just wondering, Eustace, what your take is on the work of Henry Ford and what happened to him?
Hey, good question.
Well, Henry Ford was, he changed the face of America, and he was just a farm boy from Michigan. He worked hard all his life, and he had no pretensions to anything. He became the richest man in the United States. I picked up a New York Times for 1927, and there was a two-page article about Henry Ford, the richest man in the world, in 1927.
Well, that was before the crash, too, you know.
Before the crash, yep.
Yep. Things were booming, of course, the roaring 20s.
They were booming, but Henry Ford was the one that was booming.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, he was an inventive genius. He and Edison and some of his friends were just...
Oh, they were all friends, and Al felt the same way about the criminals in Washington.
Oh, yes, they did. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
To me, Henry Ford was the Bill Gates of the industrial era.
Oh, he certainly was.
But I'm particularly interested. Have you read his Dearborn Independent articles that he produced from the early 1920s?
I have a few of them here, for they're quite rare now. But I've read them all, I think.
Yeah, so how do you, you know? What do you think about his? He had this synopsis all.
Well, he had the series on the International Jew, right?
Right. Well, they got it in a four-series book. You can get it on Amazon.com right now. It's called The International Jew by Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Amazon has that on? I can't believe it.
Yeah, Amazon.com, you can get it.
Oh, they use circulate a lot of my stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Amazon.com, The International Jew. It's like $36. It's a four-book series.
My gosh. Well, I bet he's selling a lot of them.
But, you know, my question is, that, you know, Henry Ford wrote about this 85 years ago. This hasn't changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nothing has changed. They're doing just what they were doing when they went after him. They went after him. They tried to take his motor car company.
Mm-hmm. Right. They tried to take everything, and they actually made him recant and kind of like collar and you know, as one of my greatest heroes of the 20th century, I'm wondering if you know what they actually did to him in order to make him submissive. I missed that in the history that I look for.
Well, it's not in the history, but it is quite a detailed thing. I have read accounts of it. They put so much pressure on all the people at Ford Motor Company, they were going to close them down.
Right.
But he had to make a public apology, and so then they just—they really didn't do much. I mean, a public apology is all they could get, so they got that, and everybody walked away satisfied.
Right, and they actually blame some of his writings for some of the things that happened in Germany.
They blamed everybody for what happened in Germany. Yeah. But the two people who financed the Nazi movement were two Jewish bankers, the Warburgs and Max Oppenheimer.
Right, while Prescott Bush did the whole thing. And
yeah, he was right in there with them.
Sure he was. But, you know, it goes back even farther than that, right to the Protestant Reformation. And if all people have to do, all the Protestants out there, God bless all of you, all you have to do is go back and read what Martin Luther had to say and his words that were written around 1500, 1600 area, they're still applicable today.
Indeed.
Say again?
They are indeed, because he was speaking from the heart.
Right. He wrote more concisely about the Zionist problem than even Henry Ford.
Oh, yes.
Which is hard, you know, because from a spiritual perspective, I see Mensheviks and I see Bolsheviks. And I see Bolsheviks creating the death and the strife and the war because they believe that all power comes out the end of a gun barrel.
Oh, yeah, that was Leon Trotsky.
Right, and then you have the Mensheviks that we have here who believe that power comes through control of the soul, and their whole object is to wage war on each individual's spiritual morality.
Well, that's the real Satanism there.
Well, they're both Satanists.
Yes, that's Satanist.
Right, they're both Satanists, but we've got the Mensheviks here, and around the world we've got these Bolsheviks doing what they do. And it's all a Zionist organization.
Oh, it is indeed.
Two different groups of Zionists.
And it's 5,000 years old. It's not something that started last week.
No, sir, it hasn't. And Eustace, God bless you and the work you do. You too, Rick Adams.
Thank you, brother.
Thank
Scott,
you,
it's a pleasure always. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And our number is 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins, our guest, he is quite a knowledgeable man. He lived through the era that we could only imagine living through, from the Depression to World War I, World War II, and he knows whereof he speaks from personal witness, and that makes all the difference in the world. Jerry in Michigan, hi, you're on the program. Hello,
yes,
Jerry. You are on the program.
Yes. Thank you. I want to ask Mr. Mullins if the chauffeur for
Patton.
General Patton,
mm-hmm.
he just died not too many months ago. And I wonder, did he leave any secret diaries or anything in regards to that the auto accident?
He didn't leave any secrets about it, but columns have been printed about it, and I don't have copies of it in the presence, but it has been written up a number of times. It was cold-blooded murder.
Yeah, the way I remember reading it myself.
Yeah.
Jerry, I remember reading about the death of the driver last year, and you know, he was kind of closed-lipped, I think, at the end there, and tight-lipped. He didn't want to. I don't think he wanted to die prematurely either. But what we gather was. Even casual observers today have looked at the accident and said that the way it happened was just absolutely almost incredulous. It just defied logic. The way it happened, it had to have been planned.
Well, I don't think any other general in United States history has been killed in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jerry, are you still there?
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. Yes. No, I just want to thank you, gentlemen. Your conversations are extremely interesting.
Yes, they are. They are, Jerry. Thank you for calling the program. They're interesting because, you know, today we have so much more disinformation, so much more misinformation with the History Channel and other, you know, networks and programs, Hollywood under the control of Zionists and so forth, so that it's very difficult to get any objective analysis of anything that has happened, really, in the last whole century from the Bolshevik Revolution right on down through the World War II and post-World War II era. Unfortunately, not too many people today are willing to even revisit history simply because they don't even know where they are in the present time, never mind the past. And I think that's a good reflection on the public school system and our institutions, from the church to academia to government. All of them have basically capitulated to the dark ages of political correctness, haven't they, Eustace?
They certainly have. They've done it for control purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about the truth or anything else. but they want to control people.
And that's all I want to get at is the truth. And that's why, you know, we do a TV program now and we're on the radio. I just don't like being lied to by whoever's doing the lying. And I know that the gospel of Christ has told us that the whole world lies in darkness and the whole world is deceived, the Bible said, deceived. In other words, the truth has been taken from the world on every subject, everything imaginable. Now, we see it not only in the so-called history of the Bolshevik revisit, revisionism, actually, Bolshevik revisionism. We see it in medicine. We see it in industry. We see it in commerce. We see it in government. We see it, of all places, in the church. And this newest pope, Benedict, seems to be awfully anxious to get in bed with the synagogues and the synagogues of Satan. And I'm wondering, I don't want to put you on the spot because this might not be your perfect field of expertise, yet I'll say it, and that is, it looks as if that the church is preparing the way for its participation in the new one-world religion.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're preparing. I would say that they did it. And that was financed by the OSS, which was a precursor of the CIA.
Now, what was financed by them?
They put the Zionists into the Vatican,
mm-hmm.
and the Freemasons right into the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
And before, the popes had issued encyclicals for years saying, don't let the unbelievers in. But they did it with CIA money.
Well, you know, a lot of things changed after the propaganda era of World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them was a play called The Deputy. I don't know if you're familiar
with it. Oh, I know about The Deputy. That was one of the funniest things ever put out.
But that was the beginning of the change of the American psyche and the world psyche in terms of how to view the world through Jewish eyes and Zionist Jewish eyes particularly. And basically what happened was a total revisitation, if you will, a total, upside down, topsy-turvy world that henceforth would be totally upside down from what it had been. So we had Vatican II. We had to have Vatican II to prepare us for this universalist, globalist, one-world religion.
Yeah.
You know, and you look back at the time, and Pope Pius XII, for all of his faults, in cooperating with the Zionists and cooperating with the Germans and the banks to some degree, also did a lot of very fine things, as a matter of fact, and he understood the role of the church, I think, more clearly then than any of the popes since then. And so he's been tarnished like others, and he's been browbeaten, and he's been tarred and feathered throughout history. So, you know, you almost can tell who the good guys are.
Almost. Well, you really can.
By the way they are hated and the way they are despised by the Bolshevik media.
Well, when these Zionists demonize someone,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, this Cindy Sheehan that was on the television
complaining
about her son, they demonized her. And they demonized her for one statement that she made.
Uh-huh.
She said that the Zionists should get out of Palestine.
Yeah, and she also said she did not want her son dying for anything other than American interests, and that includes Zionist interests. And she said that. Now, they of course, twisted it. They reused it over and over and over and over again to the point where they have mangled her words. They have made her into a Nazi now. They have, described her as some sort of an extremist, some sort of a radical, a racist, that type of thing, just as they had done with Patton and just as they had done with all of the others who stood in the way of international conquest.
Oh, yes, and Bill O'Reilly, who's the attack dog for the Zionists, he's the one who went after Cindy Sheehan so hard.
Sure, he wants
and
to win,
really
he wants
her,
to win
he
his gold star.
Yes, well, he won it, all right.
And here she is, a gold star mom, you know, who's out there telling it like it is.
Well, she has a perfectly right to complain about what happened.
She has more right than
war for Israel.
I mean, when George Bush gets on and tells her that she is hurting our country, that's like Stalin talking about you know, the hurt of democracy with Hitler. I mean, it's so preposterous in and of itself. It defies logic to hear a Pinocchio in the White House get on the air and make such a stupid statement as that, which defies common sense when he is the one that's taken our troops there. He is the one that must bear full responsibility, not Cindy Sheehan, not her son, not the protesters, but George Bush. He's weakened our country from within. He is the one that is allowing an illegal invasion to take place in America. No one else is doing it. Cindy's not doing it. The left or the right in particular are not doing it. It's George Bush's administration that's in charge, supposedly, and he must take full responsibility.
Well, he certainly must. And this war in Iraq was actually a repeat of World War One. You know, President Woodrow Wilson took us into World War One, and he said, this is a war to end wars. This is a war to save democracy.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the same reasoning that George Bush took us into Iraq.
Of course. Of course. I said that, look, I've been preaching for a long time now, and I've been taking those words from Woodrow Wilson right up to George Bush, and indeed, the more things change, the more they remain the same, as you pointed out earlier. All right, let's see now. We have time for a quickie. Let's see if we can do it before the break. Hello, John in Arkansas. You're on the program.
Boy, hey, Rick. Now, as a matter of fact, I can't allow her to sow dissent among the American people. She's affecting my oil revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said...
Yes, George.
That being said, I've been an admirer of your guest for a long time, and it just seems like every time I hear his voice, I get wisdom and knowledge all the time. Sir, I've been a fan of yours for quite some time.
Well, thank you very much.
And you just always come prepared with hard facts, especially when they hit below the belt. And you just let the chips fall where they may.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I've been writing for 60 years, and I've never had one fact challenged in any of my books in all these years.
Fascinating. John, stay where you are if you get a question. We'll be right back with Eustace Mullins and Rick Adams, Radio Avengers. Stay tuned. Again with Eustace Mullins, extraordinaire. And we are with John from Arkansas first, before we go on to Greg in Michigan. Hello, John, back again.
Yes, sir. I apologize for that weak George Bush.
That's all right. George Bush is weak in the head anyway, so we understand that.
But to your guest, I think I first heard you, sir, on WWCR back in my shortwave days. I don't know which program it was. And that's when I started going to the library and getting books and blowing up on the facts.
You mean they still had books by Eustace Mullins in your local library?
Well, I found articles. I couldn't find some of his books.
Uh-huh.
Some articles on it, I could.
Uh-huh.
That's why I think I heard them on WWCR.
Good. All right. Any specific question, John, for you?
Yes.
Sure.
Sir, on Sidney Sheehan, you're right about that. And she has become a focal point for, grieving mothers everywhere. As a matter of fact, today, on WAIRadio.com in Little Rock, there was two guys called Butch Stone and Steve Freeman. They just drilled this poor woman to death.
Mm.
About she's a Bush hater and all this other stuff. So I called in, and I defended that woman's honor. I let them guys know, and I hit them with the facts, right? You know, and then I told them Frank Whelan wants to interview them. They didn't know who Frank Whelan was, you know. So I told them who he was. And,
well, we had Cindy on this program, this very program, about 2.5-3 months ago, and she was terrific then. But you know, she learned a lot since then too about who the real enemy is, I think, and she's gotten an awakening she never probably thought she would have gotten over the last few years.
Well, I think she's been good for everybody.
Well, yeah, she's doing yeoman work, and as I say, the media being so corrupt. Generally, the major media are, really torn between not blacking her out completely and censoring her, and on the other hand, not letting her get away with such outlandish, ideas that this war might be immoral and illegal and all of that. So they have to serve their neocon masters at the top, And that's what they're trying to do right now, is to try to undercut her credibility. Isn't it interesting, the so-called media that's supposed to be liberal and George Bush is supposed to be conservative, yet both are globalist, Zionist, internationalist, and here they are helping George Bush.
And this is a mother who's grieving for a son who was killed in a foreign war. And, you know, President Roosevelt, when he ran for re-election in 1940, he said, your sons will never die in foreign wars. Mm-hmm. And so that was right down there to me.
Of course, he lied and he knew he was lying, and everybody who had a brain in their head knew he was lying, but so what? Lying is an American pastime. Isn't that what politicians are supposed to do?
Well, they're good at it, too. They're very good at it.
Darn good at it, yeah. All right, John, any other questions?
I want to say, for those of you who want to hear me on that archive, can I give it out, Rick?
Sure.
It's WAIRadio.com. Go to the Butch Stone and Steve Friedman section, and you can hear why I blasted them and made them apologize what they did to that woman.
All right, okay.
And I want to say one more thing to your guest, sir. Have you thought about podcasting?
I'm broadcasting now.
No, talking about podcasting.
Podcasting?
Yes, sir. You got too much information to be shared just be going from talk show to talk show. You need to podcast.
Well, I should, but, you know, I've barred everywhere. The only place I can get on is the talk shows. I can't get on television anywhere.
Hey, Rick, I'm going to hang up, but can you explain to him what podcasting is?
Well, I think I better let someone else do that.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you. I don't have time right now. I tell you what, though. Thank you, John. Can you hang on a little bit after the hour?
Oh, I think so, yes.
All right. I know it's getting past your bedtime soon, so I don't want to take too much time from you. But stay where you are because we have a break coming up. Greg from Michigan, if you can hang on,
we'll
hold you over until the beginning of the next hour, which will be in 3 minutes. And anyone else who wants to hop on the line quickly now, do so at 800-313-9443. That's the magic toll-free number. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We'll be back.
Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Yes, and we will one day discuss this podcasting. I just don't want to get into it right now, but it involves the Internet, and it involves using the MP3 format so that you can bring information to people anywhere who are on the net. And then they can download it, if you will, or compress it, and then listen to it later. It's sort of like a library of the Internet. But, Eustace, as you get on in years and God has blessed you with a long life, you know, you have so much knowledge and wisdom, as our listeners have said. You might want to consider doing that and other things as well, because time is short. And the word needs to be getting out through any source, any means possible that is available to us. So we hope to be able to see you do that.
All right. I look forward to it.
Amen. All right. Greg in Michigan. Hi, you're on the program with Eustace Mullins.
Oi, vey!
Hello there.
I had to do that for John because he's such a knowledgeable caller, and I really admire the education he's given himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people could learn a lot from John. So, John, keep it up.
Not bad for an ex-con, huh?
Oh, you know what? That's what would they have said of the founding fathers.
We need more convicts like that.
But he I listen to him, and I listen to your show. I love your show. It's fantastic. I'm the first time I've called.
Thank you.
Of course, I love this guy, Eustace Mullins. He's just been fantastic. I mean, what a historical icon. I'll never forget reading Secrets of the Federal Reserve.
Yep, I read that years ago.
And about a dozen years ago, I was on a trip, and I was driving through Virginia, and I saw the Ezra Pound Academy, I believe it was. And I thought... Mm-hmm. Myself, I was just stunned. I'm like, wow, just like Eustace said.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I wanted to comment because you were talking about General Patton's driver, who I knew personally.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and I had had dinner with him on several occasions. He was a good friend, good guy. And we had often, me and a couple other friends, had asked him about the relationship there. And he always said that it was just an accident. It was.
Yeah, that's what he was told to say, right?
Well, I don't know if he was or he wasn't now. You know, perhaps he was. But I would like to think that I knew him well enough because I've known him a while, and I pressed him on the issue, but you're right. You know,
no, he didn't want to talk about it in public. That was one of the things in the obituary that was stated, you know. He really didn't want to talk about it, and I think for obvious reasons, you know. He didn't want to meet with a premature death himself.
Well, he lived to be a good old age. And,
yeah.
And
well, that's why. He didn't talk.
Well, I don't know. He talked to me about it, you know, in depth, and that's why I was somewhat surprised.
But who knew about it?
Well, I went through, well, nobody. But
nobody knew it. Just you and him.
I went through all his pictures and that and everything, and, you know, we shared a lot of good times. Him and a few friends that we socialized with.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
all right, so what was your take on it then? What did you feel? How did you feel about what happened?
Well, you know, I feel much in the manner of what you're saying, but, however, I just couldn't get him to say that, and he never indicated as such, and I'd like to think, I mean, he was a great guy, fantastic American, and I would like to think that he would have had that honesty, but perhaps he may have been intimidated. No one ever knows, but I tend to think along the lines that you do.
All of the circumstantial evidence, at least, you know, aside from the incident itself, would indicate that Patton had a very big mouth, and he really talked, let everybody know what his intentions were. He intended not to retire, but to resign totally from the U.S. military, freeing him to speak out on the atrocities that went on under Eisenhower. And, you know, Eisenhower had already been pre-selected by the globalists to be president in the 1950s. So, you know, they just had to make sure Patton did not come home to spill the beans.
You know, another thing.
Stay where you are. We got a break. All of you on the line will be right back. We'll take a break, and our guest, Eustace Mullins, will return.
Rick Adams is back. Live, uncensored radio, Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Well, Eustace, I had not intended on keeping you up a little later than normal, but you see, you've generated so much interest and so many callers that I have imposed on your schedule for just a wee few more minutes.
Well, it's perfect, because I like to get callers.
Well, good.
And these are very good callers, too.
Yes, excellent. Excellent questions and comments. And, Greg, you were about to make a point, Greg from Michigan, before we had to break. So go ahead. I'll let you get back to what you were saying.
I just I thought it always interested me that Larry McDonald was the nephew of Patton there.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, of course, he was doing some very important work at his untimely disappearance, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought it was quite interesting, the lines that him and his uncle, you know, had drawn in getting out the truth.
Lawrence P. Patton McDonald, yes, indeed.
And, well, I just wanted to say, once again, I love your show, and this Eustace Mullins is one sensational guy. I love you having him on here. It's been a great evening to get some extra knowledge in.
Oh, this is the place to get it, right here on RBN, all day and all night.
I hope you can have him on some more, and thanks a ton, Rick. Keep up the fantastic job. You're the right man for the job.
Well, I appreciate that, Greg, and I will send you the check in the morning, I promise.
Have a good evening.
Thanks for the accolades. All right.
And say good wishes to John Stadtmiller, too. He's always been a heck of a good guy and a real trooper.
He certainly is. Thank God. Without him, we wouldn't be anywhere right now, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to keep the station alive.
And the network growing. Yes, indeed, we are.
Thank you.
And that's so important, Eustace, to do that. I do appreciate your coming on because, you know, as I said earlier, it's not like you're just an author. You know, we have authors all the time, and many of them are young Turks. And they'll tap from this source, tap from that source. They'll go about doing what anybody can do. They can just go and read about 200 books and put them all into their book, you know, and some of it might be called plagiarism, some of it not, but they weren't there. And that's the important point. You were there, as they used to say. You lived through this era, so you know a little bit about it, more
well,
so than me.
Well, I was there. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And you suffered the consequences for it as
oh,
well.
Oh, I paid the price. Some friends of mine in Chicago, they said years ago, they said, Juiceless Mullins has paid the price.
Mm-hmm.
And it shocked me because I didn't think I'd paid anything.
Yeah. And like you say, you got off lucky compared
to
Ezra Pound and others. All right. More calls now. 800-313-9443. Radio Avenger, the program Uncensored, Radio Free America, only on Republic Broadcasting Network. And Walt, you've been waiting a while. Walt from Arizona, hi.
Well, good evening, Rick and Eustace.
Yes, thank you.
I have several copies of your books, Eustace. Heard you speak under the sponsorship of Pastor Emery over in Peoria many years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I had brought along a great many of your books to have a personal autograph, for which I thank you again. I have a number of items, and I will get them in priority, and you can cut me off whenever you want to.
All
if
right,
you
go,
feel
go ahead. Right down the line. Go ahead.
Having lived 4 years in South Africa, I came across a number of interesting books in the last days when I was there in the area of Durban. And I have a copy of Power and Influence by Lord Beveridge. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yes, but that's a book I have not seen. I know about Lord Beveridge.
All right. Well, I have a copy. He was 19 years in the civil service with Lloyd George. And in 1919, he became a chancellor or headmaster, let's say, of the newly struggling London School of Economics and Political Science.
Mm-hmm.
And his autobiography was published in London in 1938. I acquired that copy when I was in South Africa, and it was most revealing. If you can get a copy of it from the Library of Congress or elsewhere, or if not, why, you already have a mailing from me under the main topic of fluoridation and other sundry items.
Oh, yes.
You remember that, huh?
Oh, yes.
Okay, you got me placed then. If you cannot get a copy from the Library of Congress, I will send you by priority insured mail my copy so you can peruse it and get all the information about the skullduggery done by H.G. Wells and Potters and others all there in the tea rooms of London in the early 1900s.
Yep.
But the most important portion of it is the revelation of the funding that came to expand the London School of Economics and Political Science.
Oh, I never knew where they got their funding. That's quite interesting.
Yes, it's most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Item number two would be concerned get a family tree of Henry Morgenthau Sr. and follow it down both branches, the Junior and the Alma branch, to find Barbara Tuchman, a great authorist, who was the first member of the CFR.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Her daughter also, Jessica Tuchman Matthews, is now the head of the Carnegie Endowment.
My gosh.
Yep. So get a hold of that and do a family tree on the Morgenthaus right on down. Of course, Henry Morgenthau Sr. had a big hand in getting Wilson elected.
Oh, he certainly did.
Yeah.
And, you know, Henry Morgenthau Sr. made his money, but he created Harlem as a black ghetto. You know, Harlem was an old New York area.
It was Caucasian area, really.
It was mostly Germans.
Right, right, right.
And now, of course, it's a black ghetto.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Very
well,
good.
Well, Morgenthau made many millions of dollars by converting it into a black ghetto.
All right, Walt, can you make just one more point before we move on?
One more point, yes. The identification of Tito in Yugoslavia.
Yes.
There's a Spanish two-page enclosure in that packet on fluoride. Get one over to the Spanish embassy in New York and have them translated for you. If not, grab an illegal who speaks and reads Spanish and can translate for you. The identity of Tito, Walter Joseph Weiss, a KGB agent who took the identity of the original. It's all in that two-page in Spanish that I enclosed. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's terrific.
The more things change.
That will be enough for tonight.
Yeah, the more things change, huh? All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for your call.
The more they remain the same.
You bet. All right.
Well, I'm off. And, Greb, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, brother. Old-timer you. All right. We need more people like you in this world, Walt. Bob in Texas, you're next on the program.
I have a comment. I'm not sure it's appropriate, but when you were talking about revisionism, history revisionism, an event occurred 5 days before September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what that was?
Well, there were a lot of events. I mean, can you refresh my memory?
Yeah, there was a conference in South Africa on racism in Durban, South Africa.
That was one of them, yeah.
Yeah, and we withdrew from that conference.
Mm-hmm.
Because we said we did not want to, in my opinion, we made the statement that we won't even talk to these people.
Yep.
And 5 days later, September 11th happened.
Right.
Now, the reason I'm calling is, on the History Channel last night, National Geographic, there was a documentary about September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very detailed. But it didn't mention this event, okay? Which I think that any history of what happened on September 11th should include the fact that 5 days before September 11th, we withdrew from a conference involving in Durban, South Africa.
It had to do with Israel, Zionism, and racism.
Yeah, it was to talk about racism in the Third World.
Right.
And we withdrew from that. And when we did that, we said we won't even talk to you about it.
No, and I know. You're right about that. And maybe our guest can also recollect that particular time frame. Eustace, do you remember that conference? And what
I remember that conference and that we withdrew from it. But then, of course, 9/11 came along and overshadowed that. So.
Not only overshadowed it, but completely changed the whole agenda.
Well, it did.
And then Israel, instead of being the, quote, victim once again, was in the driver's seat telling us that we had better start getting tough with the Muslims and the darkies and others as well that just didn't see it our way, you know?
Well, that's true. 9/11 really saved Israel's skin because Israel was going down the drain at that time.
Well, what I'm trying to say is I give a probability that withdrawing from the conference was the trigger for 9/11.
Oh, yes.
And the reason I say that, the reason that's becoming more and more obvious to me is you don't see it in any of the documentaries. It's totally gone. I bet you could read the whole 9/11 report.
I understand that,
Bob. It's not in there.
You're right. You see, let me just say this as host, and that is that if that were the only thing, that was the only incident, then we could probably just shrug our shoulders and say, well, you know, that's just an exception to the rule. That's just one occasional thing. But the fact of the matter is, if you probe deeper than what we've already probed, and you go back and look at the origins of the war against Islam and the anti-Islamic, if you will, position papers of the United States government and the State Department, almost all of them had their origins in Israeli fundamentalism, in the Israeli government, the Likud party. Since the 1980s and early 90s, they were warning us, quote unquote, about the threat of Islamofascism. So you're right. There is a trail here. There is evidence here that all of these plans and programs of us adopting Israel's enemies were already being brought into fruition at that time, culminating with 9/11, obviously. Thank you, Bob, for your call. Eustace, you can comment on that when we come back, if you'd like. And Kevin and Rudy, stay where you are. When we return, we'll take your call.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams, come on. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams is on. Ouch.
Yes, we are back, and I am Rick Adams, and we are speaking with Eustace Mullins, and on the line, Bob from Texas. Were you still there, Bob? I think we dropped him because we were commenting on the conference in Durban at the time, and of course, it did bring forth at conference some of the weirdest groups as well. They weren't all lily white, pardon the pun, interest. Many of them were, you know, the usual assortment of freaks and communists from southern Africa, the ANC types and so forth, the Bishop Tutus and Alan Bosacks and others who were involved in communism in South Africa. So I'm not going to carry their torch all the way. However, I will say that when they did touch on the sore toes of the Zionists in Israel, all of a sudden, boy, Powell and Rumsfeld and the rest of them and Baby Bush and Dick Cheney went running for cover and anything to protect their masters in Jerusalem. I thought it was very interesting that 9/11 changed that whole picture. And indeed, I was one of those on the air locally to say that when no one else would. And I think that bears repeating, Eustace.
It certainly does.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go on to Kevin in Ohio. Hello, Kevin. You're on the program.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, Rick. Listen, you brought up a topic that caught my attention that I really don't hear discussed very often and given the attention that it really deserves. And that's the role of the Vatican in the establishment of this new world order. You hear a lot of people that they'll call in on the talk shows and they'll say, oh, the Vatican is in charge, the Vatican is in charge, the Vatican is running the world system. It's the Jesuits, you know, Eric John Phelps says it's the Jesuits are running the show. But when you actually look at what's happened in the Vatican mm-hmm. since World War II, mm-hmm. it has taken a distinctly pro-Jewish, pro-Zionist.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So, and that was planned that way, by the way. As I mentioned, the play The Deputy and the psychological impact it had on the whole world and why it was written and produced, that turned everything upside down, particularly aimed at the church, the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of knowledgeable writers on Masonry, Freemasonry in the Vatican, in particular Piers Compton and Leon de Ponchins.
Uh-huh.
They've written books, and they have essentially laid out how the Vatican has fallen under the grip of the Freemasons.
No doubt about it.
And in addition, there's several Catholic priests who have written on the topic, and they've said that there are also high-ranking Muranos, who, you know, there are Jewish people pretending to be Christians. So the combination of the Freemasons and the Jewish Muranos in high Vatican positions has subordinated the Vatican to the New World Order stance.
Do you know how many Jewish popes there were in history?
Well, I know there were several, but recently very few people are aware of the fact that John Paul II, his mother's mm-hmm. maiden name was
yes.
Katz.
Yes, Katz, yes.
And most of his friends in childhood, he socialized more with his Jewish side of his family. Of course, his father was Polish Catholic.
Uh-huh.
So throughout his life, he had a distinct pro-Jewish bias.
Oh, yeah.
And in addition, the Bilderberger meetings, I have read that on many occasions the Vatican has sent its representative to the Bilderberger meetings. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that or not.
Yeah, I've heard it. I can't authenticate it personally, but I've heard it.
I've heard it going all the way back to the mid-1950s when I was getting underway.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's a very powerful institution. It's a political as well as religious authority. And now it has, you know, ambassador status, embassy here in the United States. And I wasn't one of those thinking that was a very good idea. But at the time, of course, all opposition was disbanded to that notion. So it is a powerful institution. And those who control it control and wield a pretty powerful board, don't you think?
Oh, of course. And when you think about it, I mean, John Paul I, I mean, it's well known now at this time that he had every intention to clean the Masons out of the Vatican. But, of course, they murdered him first. They killed him within 33 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was actually going to attempt a house cleaning of the Vatican, of the Masons. But, you know, he was murdered. And interestingly enough, John Paul II came in, and he did not touch one single high-level satisfaction.
Sort of reminds you of JFK and Lyndon Johnson following
exactly.
Isn't it interesting, huh?
And, of course, Pope Benedict now, is he hasn't touched any of John Paul II's Vatican personnel either. So on it goes.
And he also has been, as Cardinal, one of the Cardinal Ratzinger, has been one of the leading voices for a change of policy over the years, and it has been decidedly pro-Zionist, very much pro-Zionist.
Yeah, and can you imagine, Rick, you know, when you think about it, you know, I think it was Austrian Cardinal who recently started that debate on intelligent design and evolutionism.
Yes, yes.
Now, that's one Vatican Cardinal who sparked an enormous debate on this topic. Can you imagine if the full weight and force and power of the Vatican was to debunk Zionism
mm-hmm.
and the Holocaust, which they know.
They wouldn't dare. They wouldn't dare.
No, but what I'm saying is, yeah. can you see how subordinate the Vatican is to Judaism?
Oh, absolutely is. Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, it has been, as I said, since the Vatican II. It was a classic illustration of the control that they began to wield in the Vatican openly. Openly. I'm not saying they weren't doing it behind the scenes before, but openly changed. Thank you, Kevin, for your call. Appreciate it. Can you hang on for another call?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. We'll be back with Rudy in Texas and you. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, if you want to know the truth, I don't much care for the time I was born into. It seems people aren't dying fast enough these days. They call upon science to invent new, more efficient weapons to depopulate the earth.
Hey, and I can't hear you in my headphones, but it's now I can hear you. Hey, all right. Yeah, depopulating the earth. I think some of these people have that idea, don't they? All right, we're back now with Eustace Mullins on Uncensored Radio Free America on RBNLive.com and its great affiliate stations throughout the country and the world, for that matter. And, Eustace, we have Rudy in Texas now. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Rick. How are you tonight?
Good, very good. Glad we could squeeze you in.
Oh, me too. I'm so glad to be able to talk with you and Mr. Mullins tonight.
Sure.
I have a lot of things that I would like to discuss, but there's one thing in particular that I heard Mr. Mullins say on a previous interview. I believe it was with Jack McLam.
Yes.
He had, just in passing, he mentioned that at one time, or he was there when the John Birch Society was founded, and David Rockefeller had something to do with it. Could you elaborate on that a little bit for me?
Well, it was Nelson Rockefeller that set it up.
Nelson Rockefeller, okay.
Yeah, and I had two friends of mine there, John Hooker and his son, Wes Hooker,
mm-hmm.
Were there at that president. I mean, John Hooker was a powerful Chicago realtor,
mm-hmm.
and he had some interests with Rockefeller. And they set up the John Birch Society. And one of the Rockefellers' company was National Biscuit Company, and so they bought the Welsh Candy Company from Robert Welsh.
Was it like $10 million or something?
Oh, I don't know, but it was.
But it was overinflated, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very inflated.
Yeah, because see, we did this program with Michael Collins Piper from the American Free Press, and he said exactly the same thing you're saying now.
Oh yes.
So this is a way that they can play both sides against the middle, I guess.
Well, that's exactly right. And the John Birch Society was set up to control because, you see, the Ford Foundation and the other foundations had been so exposed as pro-communist and anti-American
mm-hmm.
that they needed to get the people back into something which they thought was respectable.
Oh.
And so they created the John Birch Society out of whole cloth, and it was a repeat of the Ford Foundation. and the others, but...
Henry Ford again rolling in his grave.
Oh, yes, indeed.
incredible what they did to that company, and then they made it public. They put it on the stock exchange, and that was the end of it. His progeny sold out, unfortunately.
Oh, yes. They all sold out for many millions of dollars.
For a mess of pottage, as the scripture says, you know.
It was a mess, all right.
they sold their birthright.
Yes.
Rudy, so you bring up a good question now, you see, about the formation of the Birch Society, because, as I said, we had Mike Collins Piper talk about it, but I didn't realize that you, Eustace, were right on the scene at the time.
Well, no, I wasn't on the scene. I merely heard...
No, Eustace, I mean.
Oh, Eustace was, yeah.
Eustace was on the scene at the time. You
well,
were there.
I wasn't actually on the scene, but Revelo Oliver was one of the founders of the John Birch Society.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time...
He was forced out, too.
He was forced out because he wouldn't go along with the pro-Israel policy.
Right.
Well, thank you for answering that question and setting it straight for me. I'm sure my Bircher friends will be glad to know that.
Yeah, that's true, because it, you know, I was once a Bircher myself, and a lot of people were joiners and felt that it did, and it did a lot of good work in many ways. It certainly did, but unfortunately, they didn't realize who was really in control there, and there were always questions about Mr. Welch and his philosophies and his tactics and so forth. So, you know, now it all comes out, and people know now what they probably didn't know then at the time, you know?
Well, I still got a copy of Robert Welch's book, The Politician, which accused Eisenhower of being a communist, and Eisenhower was never a communist. He always worked for the communists.
Well, I don't know now. Wait a minute now. Didn't Robert Welch say he never actually accused him of being a communist?
Well, he did not. Now, that was distorted. And, But it became gospel, so nobody ever challenged that.
Well, you know, Eisenhower never wanted to sue. He didn't want anybody to read it.
Oh, he never. I don't think he ever complained about it in any way.
No, he did. He was very nervous about it, but he felt that most people would not have read it, and certainly the controlled media would not have published it and given it any sort of publication across the television medium or the radio networks at the time, or especially the New York Times. You know, they wouldn't want to give it any credence at all, because they were bought and paid for then. Yeah, if they had been bought and paid for 100 years, my goodness.
Oh, and J.P. Morgan and the Rothschilds, you know, actually bought the New York Times from the Sulzberger family.
Yeah.
They put up the money.
Of course. And, you know, they did the same thing, by the way. And, Rudy, you could stay on the line for this.
Okay.
They did the same thing, the powerful international banking families, with the colleges at Harvard, Yale,
yes,
and so forth. They actually set up the history department. They paid to have the sciences, the various and sundry, what we now call social studies, history departments, civics, and so forth, so they could control the publishing of books, the textbooks that would be used, and literally the chairmanships of those departments were bought and paid for by these banking conglomerates. So they had to say what they were being paid to say. You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And that's exactly what is the case today with the publication of the New York Times and so forth. They're no different now than they were then, only they're probably a little more bold about it today.
They're very bold now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, George Baker, who was our J.P. Morgan Sparker in a lot of enterprises, put up all the money for the Harvard Business School.
Absolutely.
He put up $25 million in cash.
Exactly. There you go. All right, Rudy. Wow. Anything else?
Well, I just wanted to say that I really do admire and respect Mr. Mullins and you for this, and I thank God for things like for Radio Free Austin here in Austin and the Republic Broadcasting Network, because otherwise we wouldn't know the truth.
Exactly, and you said the magic words, thank God. Amen. Ruby. Thank you, Rudy.
Good night.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, I always do that. I always give thanks every day for another day that we have on this fine network, another day that we all have the freedom of speech while it's here, while we still have it, to be able to challenge this government, to be able to challenge evil, to be able to be John the Baptist, if you will, of the airwaves, and tell the truth. We know what happened to John the Baptist, and we don't have any delusion that someday we may have to face that same tribunal headquartered in Jerusalem. But we know what comes after that, and we know we know the scriptures tells us who is going to win.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we've already won the battle now. We're just passing through the time, that's all. I have to mention, by the way, you know, people who listen every night are looking forward to certain guests tomorrow night, don't miss it. Tell all your friends. We do have Lindsey Williams on the program.
Oh, Lindsey Williams?
Yes.
I traveled with him for years. I didn't know if he's still alive or not.
Pastor Reverend Lindsey Williams, a Baptist man, preacher, who wound up as chaplain on the Alaska Pipeline.
Oh,
yes. He has written several great books. He will be with us tomorrow night talking about the energy non-crisis. His book is now more relevant than it was 20
years ago. It really is. It's an amazing book.
Absolutely.
Well, be sure and give my regards.
I will. Let's see. We got one more call. Can you take it, or you want to go to bed?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Eustace is alive and powerful tonight, huh? All right. Okay, Al. Hi, Al in Texas. You're on the program.
Good evening, Rick. How are you?
Very good, Alan.
Hey, I wanted to go back to that, not this previous call of Rudy, but before we're talking about the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Yes.
And their connection with pro-Zionism and so forth. Listen, when Ratzinger was
cardinal,
yep, to become the new pope, you know, right away that day, and immediately for several weeks, I believe, there was talk about him being in the Hitler Youth.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is a very interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
Now, again, going back to the History Channel, they had a major propaganda thing going on about the Hitler Youth afterwards, after he was elected to be the Pope.
Uh-huh.
And their stance on the History Channel was that, oh, these poor kids were made to do it. You know, they couldn't mm-hmm. help it. They had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was so interesting, and I would like to have a comment about him being in the Hitler Youth. And then the other thing is that, very interestingly, again on the History Channel the other day, they were talking about the controversy about Pearl Harbor. Evidently, uh-huh. there are several prominent historians
uh-huh.
that are blowing the whistle, like many of you, saying that it was all planned and known, and yet they brought it all out and mm-hmm. then turned around and poo-pooed all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you comment on that, please?
Well, what do you mean when you say poo-pooed now? Did they
poo-poo? Saying that, oh, no, it couldn't have been, they couldn't have known, and there's not enough evidence and all that, even though they had previously covered all the information, how they did break the codes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And
well, it wasn't only that. The documentation is there, and Eustace can tell you from his point of view. I can tell you from mine. Go ahead, Eustace. Do you want to address that Pearl Harbor again?
Oh, there's more evidence coming out all the time. In fact, there was a program on last night, and it actually said that the Japanese Navy did not keep radio silence when they were on their way to Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so cruise ships heard all of their military instructions on the way to Pearl Harbor, and also radio stations all up and down the West Coast in Seattle and Los Angeles were clocking the progress of the Japanese approach to Pearl Harbor.
Yes, and I find it very interesting that they are now bringing all of this out. And
yeah, I never heard that before last night. It's the first time I ever heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It was 2 days ago when they aired it previously. So it's interesting that they're bringing this stuff out right now when we are trying to actually bring it up and expose and bring it, this stuff.
Well, they know the heat's on, and people who look. Yeah, you know,
really
don't forget, the History Channel is owned by a few Jewish gentlemen, by the way, and they are part of this old revisionism, if you will, the rear guard of the Zionist internationalists. So they are not going to be the source for truthful or accurate information. That goes without saying. But,
well, could you comment on Ratzinger being in the Hitler Youth and some of the implications on that? Because I don't think I've heard justices you on that.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about that, Eustace? Do you know enough about Ratzinger as a child and as a young man and the Hitler Youth?
Well, the Hitler Youth itself was very much like Franklin D. Roosevelt's CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were building roads and working out in the country and that sort of thing. This Hitler Youth you're supposed to throw up your hands in horror when you mention the Hitler Youth, you know. Well, the Hitler Youth was very much like a CCC, and it was a very innocuous organization.
Well, that's true, basically, and I think the only reason, you see, the Zionists would like to make sure that anybody who becomes Pope has something in their past that
they
could then control. Right, exactly.
They call it a Panama. It's a scandal.
Exactly, and even though it's not something that, you know, he, you know, can be tried for, although they'd like to be able to try everybody in Germany at the time for some war crime, it's something that always lingers in the backs of people's minds. And, you know, we just had this confrontation the other day where the Pope did come out, Pope Benedict, and he did announce some concerns about Israel. They were upset because apparently he, you know, he neglected Israel when he was talking about victims of terror. And he said that, well, you know, the fact of the matter is that Israel is in violation of international law against the Palestinians. So he made that statement. He came out. The Vatican made that statement to try, I believe, to make it look as if they are trying to be fairly objective in the world arena. But I think, unfortunately, that belies their other efforts. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing that they were talking about today in one of the RBN programming, I believe, or maybe GCN, was that the there's a push for the ADL to make some specific
the hate speech
parameters against anti-Semitism. Now, the funny thing about that is that the Jewish or the Israelite people or of that nature in that group are the, not the only Semitic people. The Arabs are Semitic as well.
Well, we know that that word anti-Semitism is just a term that has been created because of its ring. It's a shock term, it's a buzzword, and it means nothing because, as you say, the real Semites actually in the Middle East are Arabic and Muslim people. And matter of fact, and you really come down to it, could argue that the Europeans are Semites or descendants of Shem as well. Not Sem, but Shem. So they've even mangled the words Shem and made it Semitic. So they've bastardized everything today. Al, thank you for your call. I appreciate
thank
it very
you.
Much. Good points. And this may be the point where I have to let you go, Eustace, because I know I've drained you. I've used you now to be on this program. I've literally taken all this time with you, and I think I feel guilty for doing it because
oh, you don't feel guilty at all because your callers get better all the time. It's very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you. But our callers are great, aren't they?
They really are.
They are fantastic.
It's encouraging to talk to people like that.
Well, it is. It is. And we certainly want you to be encouraged.
Of course, I've never been discouraged.
No, but we want you to be further encouraged and continue, as you say, whether it's the potting or the Internet itself or maybe a program that will expand for you where you are in the limelight every day, that would be nice because, you see, we're up against the forces of powerful, powerful people. We can't compete against the History Channel with the truth. We can't do that because millions and millions of people have their eyes glued to Hollywood. Millions and millions of people have their ears glued to Rush Limbaugh, although that's changing now. We see a change in the ratings. We see a diminution of their audiences. I think people really and truly have had enough. And when you hear about the Holocaust every single minute of every single hour of every single day, after a while it begins to boomerang, and it becomes a it becomes a negative for them, not a positive.
Well, you know, Rush is such a phony, but I used to have a program in which he followed my program in Florida.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was always introduced on that program in Florida as the most dangerous man in America, which is what Jay Gruber called me publicly.
He and called you that?
Yes. And so Rush Limbaugh started introducing himself as the most dangerous man in America,
ooh,
which is really hilarious.
Well, I think he was being honest at that time.
Well,
he probably is the most dangerous man in America today. I know one thing. You are probably the most informed man of the hour who lived through this period, Lindsay. Lindsay, I'm calling you Lindsay now because I see his name on the screen. Eustace, thank you very much for being here again.
Well,
and we'll have you back every couple of weeks or so.
Oh, that'll be fine.
Thank you.
Very
all
good.
Right, Eustace. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Well, Eustace Mullins, you can look him up on the net. You can just type his name in. You'll see it all over every search engine. Google it tonight. All right. Rick Adams with you. We'll be right back with more of the program.
Hitting them pretty hard and knocking them right out of the park. Rick Adams is on. Right on. On base, on point, on RBNLive.com.
That's the best thing I've heard all evening.
You bet. Thank you, sir. And, well, it's true what Eustace has said. I think we here at RBN, all of us, have a great audience. And you know why? I think it's because we offer audiences an opportunity to really get online and talk. You know, Rush Limbaugh and others, of course, screen out all of their callers so that the people on the other end, the people who listen and never call, which is 99 and 99, 44, 100th percent or whatever, they only get what the host wants them to get. We don't do that here. I will always allow, and we always do, for real debate and discussion of all issues from every angle. It just so happens now that we read of this story by Deborah Caulfield Ryback in the Star Tribune. Twin Cities listeners have been tuning out political talk radio. So she says, locally, conservative talk icon Rush Limbaugh's show has lost 43% of its audience among 25 to 54-year-olds in the past year. Sean Hannity's show is down a whopping 63%. The shift is serious enough that we're weighing where these shows fit for us in the future, according to Todd Fisher, general manager at KSTP 1500 AM, which carries both syndicated programs. So we're told many Americans also are switching the dial. While ratings for political talk radio typically drop the year after an election, experts around the country sense something else is in the air. Many Metro listeners are turning to local, often sports-oriented shows. We're not sure yet what's really going on, said veteran host and veteran talk show programmer Ken Cole, Clear Channel's director of news and talk programming for Northern California. In general, talk shows that are succeeding are the ones that haven't been reliving the election or constantly harping on the polarization between liberals and conservatives. Cole thinks many listeners have tuned out because of war fatigue. Well, others have their views. I have mine and my opinions, and quite honestly, I've seen, from what I'm hearing, our listenership increase dramatically here at RBN, the other networks as well, that carry true alternative political talk. We, I believe, are being blessed right now, this time, with an influx of listenership that we never dreamed of having. There are people who are tuning in all the time. Literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of people each day tune in, tune out, even for a few minutes, tune in, tune out, you know, because that's the nature of the beast. You know, you don't tune in and stay, most people don't stay all day with anybody. But the fact of the matter is, these ratings are changing. And I believe Limbaugh, though he still carries a command of listeners across America, is now beginning to shed not only some weight, maybe, but also shed his popularity. And I think people are fed up with the fact that these talk shows are programmed. They're not real. They're highly scripted. And people are getting tired of the so-called mainstream media as well. We'll have to spend more time talking about this in the near future. But we're just about out of time now. And do I have another call? No, I don't think so. Do I? We're out of time. I'm sorry. All right. Tomorrow night, Lindsay Williams will be with us. The energy non-crisis and much more. Don't miss it. Tell your friends and call in right here on Uncensored Radio Free America. Rick Adams, everyone. God bless you. Good night.